from KQED.
I'm Rachel Miro, and this is a special broadcast from the California Report. This is the first debate between Attorney General candidates Steve Cooley and Kamala Harris. Republican Steve Cooley is the district attorney in Los Angeles. Democrat Kamala Harris is the DA in San Francisco. They'll be taking questions from a panel of journalists at the UC Davis School of Law. And now, let's join the debate.
I'd like to welcome you to this first ever debate between the Republican and Democratic nominees for the office of California Attorney General. I'm Kevin Riggs of KCRA3, and I will be moderating this event this afternoon. This event is sponsored by the UC Davis School of Law and the Sacramento Bee. Please join me at this point in welcoming our two candidates who are here with us this afternoon, Los Angeles District Attorney Steve Cooley and San Francisco District Attorney Kamala Harris. California's Attorney General has broad authority to enforce state laws governing consumer rights, privacy, the environment, public corruption, drug enforcement, the death penalty, and much more. The office also is charged with defending the governor's office in legal challenges. And based on recent history, California's Attorney General also becomes a frontier candidate for the governorship. Our panelists this afternoon are Jack Leonard of the Los Angeles Times, Marisa Lagos of the San Francisco Chronicle, and Dan Moraine of the Sacramento Bee. All right, here's our format. Here's how it's going to work. The answers will be kept to 90 seconds with 60-second rebuttals. The panelists also will be asking follow-up questions as they feel necessary. And audience members, we're asking that you please keep your applause in check until the end of the debate. Plenty of time to give applause then, depending, of course, if you like what you hear. All right, with 60-second opening statements by each candidate and by a flip of the coin, we start this afternoon with Steve Cooley.
Thank you very much. My opponent and I share similar titles. However, on many other issues, values, and priorities that affect our discharge of our duties as district attorneys and how we would discharge our duties as attorney general, we are starkly different. I'd like to talk about one of those differences today, and that is the death penalty. My opponent absolutely, ideologically, opposes the death penalty, which is the law in California. I support it. This particular position of hers was underscored when she refused to pursue the death penalty against the killer, the gang member, the AK-47 wielding gang member who shot down Officer Isaac Espinosa. She declared her opposition to pursuing the death penalty in that case before he was buried. Underscoring that dramatic refusal is the fact that today with us are the widow, the mother, and the sister of Officer Isaac Espinosa. They're supporting me, along with 47 law enforcement organizations, because they know who should be the next Attorney General of California. They know who will uphold the law.
Ms. Harris?
Thank you. California's criminal justice system is broken, and it needs to be fixed. In this race, there are two clear choices, and it is the choice between going along with status quo and innovation. And I'll give you three examples. Let's talk about the environment. Proposition 23 is on the ballot. It was funded by Texas oil companies, and my opponent has stood on the sidelines on that issue. The next attorney general must be vigorous to take on criminals who pollute our environment, and I have done that work. High-tech crimes. Our obsolete systems must embrace new technology, which, of course, was developed in our backyard, to fight crimes like identity theft and sophisticated financial fraud. 21st century criminals and predators are thriving in a 20th century system. Recidivism. California has a revolving door of crime that costs our state a lot. A state that is on the verge of bankruptcy is spending about $25 billion a year on this issue. It needs to be shut. I've created a nationally replicated model, and I can do that as Attorney General. This race presents a clear choice for California, and it is the difference between defense of status quo and innovation, and the work that we need to get done in California requires that we meet 21st century challenges.
All right, it's time now to go to our panelists. The first question comes from Dan Moraine. It goes to Mr. Cooley.
Mr. Cooley, as you know, California has more than 700 people on death row and hasn't executed anybody in 5 years. Should California conclude that it is fail to implement capital punishment, admit failure, and give up?
The California voters will decide what the appropriate penalties are for the offenses committed in their jurisdiction. If they decide the death penalty is the appropriate penalty, then prosecutors are obligated by their oath of office to uphold their will and follow the Constitution. We hope that the process will go forward much more readily in the near future. It looks like there is progress being made. And I assure you, as Attorney General, I will take a leadership role in making sure that the death penalty passed by the voters and as approved by certain juries will be implemented here in California.
Ms. Harris, do you want to answer that question? Is California a failure when it comes to enforcing the death penalty?
There have been delays. They have been widely reported, and certainly there probably is work that can be done to improve that system, as in many of our systems in the criminal justice area in California. Let's look at this issue of recidivism. It is another very broken system, or evidence of a broken system in California, which is that we have a revolving door. The reality in California is that we release 120,000 prisoners a year because they've served their time. 3 years of their release, 70% recidivate. It's extremely expensive in terms of what it is costing a state that's on the verge of bankruptcy, and it's extremely expensive in terms of what it is costing us in terms of our public safety. In San Francisco, we've created a national model for what can be done to address this issue, and we have proven that there are solutions available for those who have the willingness to engage in innovation and not define our success based on a blind adherence to tradition.
Mr. Cooley, the two of you have 60 seconds to respond. You can go first.
All right. Well, in this particular instance, innovation is fine as long as it's carefully thought out and well executed. My office has certainly achieved much in that regard. It's very well documented. It's historic. And I'm very, very proud of that record. So with respect to the answer she gave, she did not respond to the issue of the death penalty very well at all in terms of, from my opinion. I think that she wants to avoid that issue because in her instance, she has absolutely, consistently, religiously refused to follow the Constitution and her oath in that regard. I think that has, in a sense, put the residents of San Francisco City and County and the rest of the state in certain jeopardy because of her failure to obey the law.
Ms. Harris.
Steve, I think that you really should not go below the dignity of this debate or the office we seek. This race is a race for who will become the next Attorney General of California. And there are many issues that are important issues that must be addressed. The reality of it is I am personally opposed to the death penalty, but I will follow the law. My position on the death penalty is the same as four of the last nine attorneys general. You and I both know nothing will change in the Attorney General's office on the issue of the defense of appeals. The work has been done under the last nine attorney general the same way as it will be done by me. And four of those last nine attorneys general hold the same position I do. We need to have an attorney general in California who has the ability to see the many issues that include mortgage fraud, that include high crime or high-tech crimes, that include the issues that need to be dealt with in terms of recidivism, the environment. Many issues are at play here and must be addressed. This cannot be a one-issue debate.
We're going to be getting to other issues, but let's move on right now. Marisa Lagos.
Ms. Harris, you say you oppose capital punishment, but you would also implement the law. I'm wondering if you're morally opposed to it, how can you justify overseeing these executions and defending the appeals as you would have to?
I believe it's a flawed system, as evidenced by the fact that there have been people convicted and sentenced to death who later through DNA were proved to be not guilty of the crime they committed. And it is a system that has to be understood to be flawed. But again, going forward, let's talk about all of the other issues that are at play when we're talking about the need to address flaws in the criminal justice system. It is about addressing the issue of recidivism. It is about addressing the issue of high-tech crime, identity theft, very sophisticated financial crimes that are going without consequence in this state because we simply have not upgraded the work we do and we have remained in a very obsolete situation where we are not taking care of and protecting victims of very significant crimes who deserve to have their voices heard and deserve that there will be consequence to those predators who prey on them.
Mr. Cooley?
Well, their voices are being heard. victims of high-tech crime, electronic crime, computer crime, the victims of mortgage fraud in its various forms and varieties, and real estate fraud, elder abuse, environmental crime, consumer crimes. They're being heard, at least in Los Angeles County. We have a fabulous, tremendous record over the past 10 years in virtually any category of criminal prosecution. And I would love to share our institutional successes with any other county in California or throughout the United States, as we have done over time, so that they can improve their situation. We're not stick in the muds. We are very accomplished, and our record speaks for itself. It's well documented. And I think one thing we could do to inform the public is take our respective records in these discrete areas of criminal prosecution, whether it be environmental prosecution, consumer protection, and put them on the internet for the world to see. Let's measure Steve Cooley's past performance versus my opponent's past performance. Past performance is a great predictor of the future. So let's look at documented record. Documented record. And that will be the instructive lesson for the people, the voters out there, in terms of who they want to be their next Attorney General.
Okay. Ms. Harris, do you have anything you want to say about the record and comparing the records between the two of you?
Oh, no. I mean, we absolutely compare the records. And you'll see that when I was elected DA, I created an environmental justice unit, which still works and thrives, unlike my opponent who disbanded his. You will know that I created a unit that addressed public integrity. I created a unit that addresses child assault. Why? Because it's one of the most pressing challenges and some of the most heinous crimes that we can face. I have done work in a unit that we created around high-tech crimes, mortgage fraud. We have thrived in that area so much so that my office received a very competitive grant from the United States Department of Justice to bring back $1 million to San Francisco to continue our good work. We have done all of that while we have also addressed the work that needs to be done and can be done around issues like truancy and recidivism and other areas that are not traditional, perhaps, in terms of the work that a law enforcement leader does, but are directly connected to every goal that we have in terms of achieving public safety and being efficient and effective and innovative in the way that we can do that. I am proud of that work, in addition to increasing the conviction rates in my office to the highest that they've been in over 15 years and sending twice as many serious and violent felons to state prison as did my predecessor.
Mr. Cooley, you have the last word on this.
Well, if we abandon our environmental law section and our efforts, then I think we would have picked the phone up and called Target, Walmart, Home Depot, SBC, AT&T, Pilot Travel, Flying J gas stations, Precision Metals, and Safety Clean, the dozens of smog fraud artists in Los Angeles County, all of whom have been successfully prosecuted in Los Angeles County during my 10 years, during my tenure. I suggest this is the time to show up with your record. Case names, numbers, and the facts of those cases and the results of those prosecutions. Then we can compare apples to apples, and that will be the guide for the voters as to who has accomplished in these very important areas of environmental consumer fraud. Let's just compare records.
All right, let's move on. Jack Leonard, your question.
Mr. Cooley, in your view, do states have the right to approve legislation such as Arizona's SB 1070, which makes illegal immigration a state crime? And if California's legislature were to approve such a bill, would you defend it?
States do have the right to pass any legislation they please. That legislation then has to be tested against constitutional principles the U.S. Constitution governs. The Arizona law is an example of that right now. And I imagine that we will get some guidance from our appellate authorities on the federal side in that arena. And I think that will give everyone guidance as to whether or not local states can be passing their own immigration laws. But I will tell you what, it does underscore the point that we should not be having cities, municipalities, such as San Francisco, having sanctuary city laws setting their own immigration policy, oftentimes resulting in harm to their constituents. Just ask the Bologna family, where they lost three individual members of that family to a gun-wielding individual here in this country illegally who evaded deportation because of a sanctuary city policy implemented by my opponent. So I would suggest that there should be clarification on this issue for cities, counties, and states in terms of the bright line in terms of immigration policy in this country.
Let me clarify. Do you support the concept behind the Arizona law?
No, I do not.
Would you defend it?
If it were passed in California, I would defend it. That's the obligation of the Attorney General. And then let the appellate courts decide. That's how the system works.
Ms. Harris.
I am opposed to that Arizona initiative. I agree with police chiefs from around the country that it undermines the work that local law enforcement needs to do in keeping their communities safe. And on this issue of immigration policy in general, I would suggest that there is clearly a lot of work we need to do as a country, mostly from the federal branch of government, around integrating and bringing people into the country legally and transitioning them into the country legally. But we do want to also avoid measures like Proposition 187 that was authored by my opponent's campaign chair, which was probably one of the most draconian anti-immigrant and anti-family pieces of legislation we have seen in the state in a generation. And I would actually challenge my opponent to state his position on Proposition 187 and denounce the spirit and the intent and the letter of that law.
Can you clarify the issue of sanctuary cities? You heard your opponent criticizing the concept.
Sure.
Can you clarify your position on sanctuary cities?
Absolutely. I do not support at all any law that would shield anyone who has committed a crime, regardless of their immigration status.
All right. Mr. Cooley, your response.
Well, that certainly wasn't the case in the murder of the three members of the Bologna family. That was someone who was effectively diverted out of the sanctuary city program or out of the justice system because of the sanctuary city policy, just as a number of individual illegal alien drug traffickers were diverted out of San Francisco down to Southern California as part of their diversion program and their sanctuary city program. So the facts don't comport with what she stated.
You have the last word on that.
I remain clear. I do not support any law that would shield anyone who has committed a crime, regardless of their immigration status. And I'm also proud of the work that I've done on many other issues that are related to this issue of immigration that was raised on many levels. I'm very proud of the work that we did in sponsoring and passing the first law in California that is an anti-trafficking, human trafficking law, where we have passed groundbreaking laws around what we need to do to ensure that, in particular, women and girls who are being brought in this country and sold for profit should be protected, and we should prosecute severely and swiftly those people who engage in that human trafficking. There are many issues that I think this issue of immigration brings up as it relates to the impact on the criminal justice system and victims.
All right. Dan Moran.
I guess this goes to Ms. Harris. Some states have challenged the federal government's authority to require that citizens purchase health insurance. Would you sue to block any aspects of the federal health care legislation?
I would not, and I believe that there is a clear difference in this race between me and my opponent on that very issue. My opponent has said that he will stand with those southern state attorneys general and have California weigh in with her limited resources and sue the national government over health care reform. I believe that would be an absolute misuse of the resources of this state, in particular when what we know is that we have a state full of people who are uninsured, who need access to affordable health insurance and coverage. We know that there is a need to recognize that the fact of being a woman or a female should not be considered a pre-existing condition that would prevent one from having access to health care. This is a very distinct and real difference between us. And again, on the issue of other impacts that we have in terms of California and the need for an attorney general to be current and to be focused on the many issues, it is about also going after those people who commit fraud in terms of health insurance fraud and Medicare fraud, and doing the work of also being dedicated to issues that address the need for working people to have the support that they need so that they can thrive and live in their communities and raise their families.
Mr. Cooley, would you sue to block health care legislation?
No. There'd have to be a consensus by whoever's going to be the governor and the new state legislature, whoever they're going to be. They're going to have to come out and sort of say, this is important to Californians. This is important to our citizenry. They have to give that directive before I, as the state's lawyer, would join any such lawsuit. So at this point, no, not without a consensus from government and the people of the state of California. But if it's in their best interest and they arrive at that consensus, then I would pursue it.
You want to respond?
Well, the Attorney General is independently elected, and I think those people who vote that person in office will hope and expect that they will exercise some independent thought that will include making decisions about how the weight of their office will bear on an issue by convening the career attorneys and the experts in the office, bringing them together to consult on what might be constitutional or not constitutional, and then making a decision through a process of analysis to determine how we should weigh in on a piece of legislation or the decision to join in a lawsuit or not. And that is the work that I plan on doing as the next Attorney General of California, which is drawing from the expertise of the office and engaging in analysis and listening and convening those who would have some knowledge about the impact of the decision I would make, as I have done as district attorney in the 7 years I've been DA of San Francisco.
Mr. Cooley, she's accusing you of ducking the issue.
Is that what she just did?
That's what it sounds like.
Obviously, you consult the expertise of the office. Obviously, you make an independent judgment based upon their expertise. When it comes to making a decision to join an amicus curiae status in a major lawsuit of constitutional dimensions, you're going to have to get a sense of what the Californians want, what's in their best interest, and listen to them. And I think that is yet to be determined. On the area of Medi-Cal fraud, health fraud, that is going to be a major area of responsibility for the next Attorney General. Medi-Cal fraud, vendor and provider fraud, is an absolute problem, a billion-dollar problem, as documented by the Los Angeles Times. I have personally prosecuted those cases. I think I could be the best leader of those entities that are concerned about that affront to our budget here in California.
Marisa Lagos has the next question. It goes to Mr. Cooley.
Mr. Cooley, our current Attorney General, Jerry Brown, has opined that he's within his rights not to defend Proposition 8, which banned gay marriage in the state. Would you reverse course and defend that initiative? And how would you decide which initiative should or shouldn't be defended in court?
An initiative passed by the people of the state of California that's not patently unconstitutional space should be defended by the Attorney General, whether the Attorney General agrees with the initiative or not. You are the people's lawyer. That is the people's will. Proposition 8 was passed by a majority of the electorate. It was deemed to be, in a 6-1 vote, constitutional by the California Supreme Court. Therefore, it should be defended by the Attorney General, whether the Attorney General believes in it or not. You're the people's lawyer. You represent their interest. I think that that principled approach to defending the people's will is something I would also apply if the people of the state of California decided that same-sex marriages were to be the law in California. I would defend that with as much vigor because that's their will, and that is what I would do as their lawyer.
Ms. Harris, is there a problem with the Attorney General not defending Prop 8?
I agree with Attorney General Jerry Brown and Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger that now that Proposition 8 has been found to be unconstitutional by a federal district court judge, that we should not use the precious resources of California to defend a law that is unconstitutional. I agree with that decision, and I support it.
So she's deferring to the federal court on this.
Well, unfortunately, federal court trial judges do not establish law that has any binding authority except within their limited jurisdiction. This is an issue that should be resolved in the appellate courts, perhaps in the Supreme Court of the United States, and by the two main defendants, the governor and the attorney general, abandoning their responsibilities as defendants to appeal. We're not going to get the resolution of this very important issue in the courts where it should be resolved. And that's not good for the public at large to have this issue just sort of out there, unresolved in the courts of our appellate courts.
You've made your position clear on this. Any last word?
Sure. Let's get back to Proposition 23. I think that It is incumbent on someone who is elected to hold these positions that we are clear with the people who vote us in and the people we represent, most importantly, that we are honest and analytical and clear and transparent about our position on pressing issues that face the state. On the issue of the environment, we currently have Texas oil companies coming in to do a full-on assault on California's environment. This is a very pressing issue. The harm that crimes against the environment exact on its victims are as imminent in many situations as any other crimes we can imagine or watch on television every night. And the Attorney General of the state of California must be clear about one's position on whether we will agree and enforce AB 32 or whether we will support AB or Proposition 23. And I would like my opponent to be clear about his position on that. I don't think we can be selective about what we choose to render an opinion about or not based on perhaps what might it might cause us in terms of some kind of political risk. And I would challenge my opponent to be clear and, you know, take on some risk. You can do it.
We're going to ask you about that. Let me just remind our viewers, our audience, Prop 23 would essentially suspend California's greenhouse gas law until the economy improves. That's a very short version of what that measure would do. Mr. Cooley, you heard your opponent say that you've been very unclear, that you've been unwilling to take a firm stand on Prop 23. What's your answer?
Proposition 23 is going to be voted on by the people November the 2nd. They're going to express their will. They're going to either say, let's delay and defer the implementation of AB 32 until certain conditions are met. And if they decide that, then that will be defended by me as Attorney General. To the extent that people do not vote for Prop 23 or is defeated, then I will defend AB 32 because that's the law of the land. And I will be in a very good position to implement Prop 32 at this critical stage when the rules and regulations to implement it are being formulated. I'm not approaching this issue from an ideological a position, as my opponent seems to be, but a very professional, lawyer-like position where we abide by the will of the people. The will of the people may be, in the future, Prop 23, or it may be AB 32, which the law signed into law by the governor and passed by the legislature. Whatever that law is, I'm the most capable person to implement it.
Why not take a position, though, on 23?
Because I'm going to wait and see what the people's will is. I will implement their will if they pass it, and I will implement AB 32 if they don't pass it. That is a very principled decision. I'm not going to pick and choose. I'm going to let the public at large tell us what they want us to do in this critical stage. And they've got a very important consideration here in terms of the impact of AB 32, perhaps on the competitive environment and the potential for job creation here in California. Those are important considerations, but it's their choice. I am their lawyer.
We are talking about the propositions. The next question comes from Jack Leonard. It goes to Ms. Harris.
If voters pass Proposition 19, which is the initiative that would legalize marijuana for personal use, would you defend that law in court?
Again, I think Proposition 19 is wonderful to bring up as the follow-up question to the last discussion because my opponent has taken a position on Prop 19 and, in fact, opined that it was unconstitutional. So I will assume that he has done a constitutional analysis of Prop 19 at this point. On Prop 19, I believe that if it were to pass, it would be incumbent on the Attorney General to convene her top lawyers and the experts on constitutional law to do a full analysis of the constitutionality of that measure and then make a determination about what action, if any, should follow. But in addition, I also believe it is important when making a decision such as what would be done with Prop 19 specifically that there should also be, by the Attorney General, a convening law enforcement leaders from federal, state, and local law enforcement to talk about what their perspective is on what passage of that proposition means in terms of the impact on public safety in those various jurisdictions and how they believe implementation should look or what their opinion is in terms of how it's going to actually roll out and how it will practically impact the work that they do every day. So both of those approaches would be my my intent if Proposition 19 passed.
Mr. Cooley, would you defend
Proposition 19, of course, the legalization of marijuana initiative, it is flawed in many, many respects. How it affects the workplace, how it affects home ownership and property rights. It's very poorly written, will not accomplish its stated goals, and I'm opposed to it. Now, the question is, would I defend it? My initial take on it is preempted by federal law. It is probably unconstitutional. The individuals in the Attorney General's office and perhaps others would probably confirm my suspicions. My instincts are it is unconstitutional. Leave alone the fact that it's a public safety issue and a public health issue. I really am strongly opposed to Proposition 19 for many, many reasons, but I would be inclined to advise that it's unconstitutional, being preempted by federal law.
Why take a position on 19 but not 23?
Because I've been a district attorney elected for 10 years. I was a deputy district attorney for 28 years. Spent 6 years as a reserve police officer working patrol. I have a certain amount of expertise when it comes to criminal justice and public safety issues, which I share, and I have historically taken positions on public safety issues. People look to people like me to share their views and their analysis of those issues that do affect public safety, and that is the reason for the distinction between, say, 19 and 23.
And the last word on that?
Well, and the distinction between me and my opponent is that I think an understanding and appreciation that the Office of Attorney General and the next Attorney General of California has many responsibilities and must be informed about the many challenges that we face as a state that extend to challenges that we have in terms of the broken prison system and the revolving door, the issues that are challenges to our state around what we will do in terms of regulation of pollution against our environment, what we will do on issues like mortgage fraud and health care fraud, what we will do in terms of adoption of technology in this state that is sorely needed to address crimes that are rampant and going without consequence, such as identity theft and sophisticated financial fraud. The Attorney General of the State of California must understand many issues and be conversant and have a plan and articulate that plan.
We're going to stay with Mr. Leonard for now, and he has a question for Mr. Cooley.
California's prison system has topped out at around 170,000 inmates. The cost of keeping these people behind bars is about $8 billion a year. Is California spending too much money to imprison too many people?
California is enjoying the lowest crime rate in 50 years. This is the benefit of incarcerating individuals for appropriate lengths of time for their criminal violations. We are, by incarcerating the right people for the right length of time, protecting the public at large. In Los Angeles County, for example, our murder rate is down 75% from its previous historic highs in the last 50 years. Our overall crime rate is as low as it's been since 1956. That's because our justice system, our law enforcement officers at the front end, prosecutors in the middle, and judges following the law have incarcerated the appropriate people and taken them off our streets so they will not hurt us more than they have been. Incarceration is a very valuable, important aspect of the justice system. That being said, we should look for alternatives to it for the appropriate candidate. And there are plenty out there that we can look to, and they have to be monitored carefully, but there are some alternatives. But do not give up on incarceration as the basic tool to assure public safety.
Ms. Harris?
Without a doubt, as a career prosecutor, I strongly believe that anyone who commits a crime must be held accountable and should face a consequence. But let's look at the issue that we are presented with in California beyond one criminal case and look at the crime problem. And that is where leadership comes in. The reality of it is that on an annual basis, we release 120,000 prisoners every year, and within 3 years of their release, 70% recidivate. It's the highest recidivism rate in the country. As I've mentioned earlier, it's extremely expensive, and it's a failed system. There must be leadership around that. We have done the work in my office of creating a reentry initiative that has reduced the reoffense rate for that population from 54% to less than 10%. This initiative has been so successful that the United States Department of Justice has designated it as a model of innovation for law enforcement in the United States. The Attorney General of California must be a leader around fixing broken systems. Otherwise, we will be constantly caught up in a very, I think, unproductive conversation that simply addresses the symptoms instead of the problem. The symptoms, most recently, being overcrowding and early release. An early release is something we cannot afford to do. But the only way we are going to reduce the likelihood of that being necessary is to shut the revolving door of crime in California, and that means addressing recidivism.
Mr. Cooley, you mentioned there may be examples where someone might be eligible for an alternative to incarceration. What are we talking about?
Well, in Los Angeles County, we did establish, in conjunction with the courts and our public defender, a women's reentry program where individuals released from prison, women, were selected and given the support mechanisms they needed to reenter. Those sorts of programs can be very helpful and help avoid recidivism. So those programs should not be ignored. They should be sought out and supported financially. However, we must talk about, get back to this leadership issue. Yes, it is true. The Attorney General has to be a leader. But to be a leader, you need a following. 47 law enforcement organizations in the state of California have endorsed in this race. All 47 have endorsed me. They want me to be the leader. Leadership requires followership. And I think that if we are going to be working with the various people in the criminal justice system, it would be good that it is someone that they have expressed their respect and admiration for, and that is very, very clear in this race. 47 on the one hand, zero on the other.
You can go ahead and respond to the issue of law enforcement endorsements.
Thank you. I will take a backseat to no one on my law enforcement credentials. I am a career prosecutor. I have personally prosecuted everything from drug crimes to homicides. I have looked in the eyes of mothers of homicide victims. I have looked in the eyes of rapists and child molesters, and I have sent them to prison for very long periods of time. I am proud in this race to also have the endorsement of people like Chief Bill Bratton from Los Angeles, the Chief of Police of San Francisco, the Chief of Police of San Diego, Chief Ron Davis, who is here today with us. I am proud to have the support of leaders who understand what we need to do to fix broken systems in the interest always of ensuring and protecting the public and ensuring public safety. All I'm right. Proud of my credentials as a prosecutor.
Dan Moraine has the next question. It goes to Ms. Harris.
The state of California prison system's under receivership because of crowding and substandard medical care. Would you try to get the state out from under this receivership? And if so, how would you go about that?
Again, the issue is, I think, that we must address is looking at what is a symptom of a problem and then dealing with the underlying problem. Part of the issue before the court in that receivership is that there are inadequate resources available in the prison system to deal with the responsibilities it has. And so what we find is that there is not the adequate work that the prison guards, much less the courts, want to have happen with people who are in the prison system, because there is the overcrowding issue, because there is the issue of the fact that we have a prison system right now that is accommodating twice the number of people it was built to handle. If we are going to get beyond reacting to the issues that face us and get to the point of providing leadership, we have to address the revolving door of crime in California. And that must be about reducing the likelihood that known offenders are going to reoffend. And let's be clear about the population we're talking about. In California, on an annual basis, the average person sentenced to state prison is sentenced for 24 months. That tells us two things. Most of them are not going in for murder, and they're all coming out. And we have no meaningful criminal justice policy for dealing with that issue, and we need some leadership.
If I may, how would you go about extricating the state of California from the receivership? If, in fact, you would do that.
Sure. We have to comply. We have to comply with what the court has decided should be the appropriate amount of care that has to be given constitutionally to those people in the prison system. And until we comply, we cannot try and circumvent the process that has been put in place.
Mr. Cooley, you heard the question. How would you convince the courts to lift the receivership?
Los Angeles County in its stead in California, other cities and counties, have had their experiences with federal consent decrees. I do not concede for a moment that a three-judge panel of federal justices is smarter, more reliable, or better in an exercise of judgment than our elected governmental leaders. The experience with these panels and their recommendations is that they are very costly, oftentimes very ineffective, and I would appeal the decisions of the three-judge panel all the way to the Supreme Court. The Plata versus Schwarzenegger case is on appeal. I would aggressively pursue that because I think that the end result, if we just concede this to the panel and the receivership proceeding, is going to be another failed consent decree apparatus that is incredibly costly. Let's let the elected officials, the people that own the system, which is not three federal judges, but the people of the state of California and their representatives, solve this problem.
All right, Marisa Lagos has the next question. It goes to Mr. Cooley.
I'm actually going to stick with Ms. Harris for one more second.
You got it.
Ms. Harris, you said your top priority would be to stop the revolving door of crime. I'm wondering what specific initiatives you would undertake, and within that, what power does the Attorney General really have over this?
Sure. So the Attorney General has, I see it as basically three components to the power of the office, and it is not unlike the power that one has as district attorney. There is the technical and statutory responsibilities of the office that must be maintained, there's no question. There is the power that comes with holding these positions that comes with the bully pulpit, frankly, and the ability then to engage in public conversation that hopefully is public education so that we can move consensus forward around a particular approach to solving an issue or addressing an issue. And then there's the power to convene, which means bringing together and around one's conference table leaders. So, for example, we talked earlier about the issue of Prop 19. We could talk about the issue of gang crime. We could talk about any criminal justice issue. The Attorney General has as a responsibility and certainly as an opportunity the ability to convene national and federal, state, and local law enforcement to deal with certain challenges and issues. There is also the power then to convene, as I've done, on an issue like mortgage fraud, which means bringing together financial institutions, together with our elected leaders who are responsible for regulation over those matters, together with universities and community folks to engage, and faith-based leaders to engage in what needs to happen around public education so we can hopefully avoid a victim from being victimized, but also do the work of creating financial literacy, and then, of course, doing the necessary work of reacting to those crimes, which means prosecuting those cases. The Attorney General also has the power and the responsibility, which is a very important one, to assist local law enforcement in the work that they want to do. And the reality of it is that when we look at crimes like environmental crimes, we look at crimes like high-tech crimes, we look at financial crimes, often local law enforcement is so strapped and overburdened, frankly, by the domestic violence case that's walking through the door, the gang case that's walking through the door, the homicide that's walking through the door, that they cannot get to the crime against the environment, the financial crime, or a case or a high-tech crime. That's where the Attorney General can provide support through training, through assistance of resources and leadership. And in all those ways, I plan on doing that work.
We're talking about priorities and revolving doors, Mr. Cooley.
Well, we sort of drifted away from the revolving door question. However, I would like to follow through on something my opponent did discuss, all these areas of different kinds of crimes, high-tech crimes, environmental crimes. I would like to once again urge the public out there listening to this to check out our respective records. These are important areas. But who's been performing during their term of office, during their tenure in office? And who's been training law enforcement officers on how to pursue identity theft, high-tech crimes? Who has been the leader in pursuing effective consumer prosecutions? Who has been the leader in environmental protection? Just compare the records. That tells the tale.
We're going to move on. Our time is getting short. Marisa has another question, and this question would go to Mr. Cooley.
You both have policies to discourage prosecutors in your offices from seeking life prison terms on a third strike if a defendant has committed a relatively minor crime. How would you handle the appeals of life sentences of three strikers if they are these sort of relatively minor third strike?
Well, my policy has been very, very effective. I established it within 10 days of being sworn in as district attorney in Los Angeles County. In December of 2000. It's been, I think, the model for other district attorneys throughout the state of California. It is not appealed. So it's the question about how would you handle these appeals is, well, they aren't appealed, except occasionally by way of writs of habeas corpus. And we do, in those cases, allow the defendant who has previously received a 25 to life sentence for a non-serious, non-violent new felony. We let that process go through. We let the judge decide. And several cases in Los Angeles County where a 25 to life sentence was achieved by my predecessor, the court has reduced the sentence. That kind of subsequent review should be encouraged, and we should do everything we can to allow the courts revisit those cases, which in some cases were unjust sentences based upon the nature of the new offense.
Ms. Harris, how would you handle those kinds of appeals?
There's no difference between my opponent and me on the issue of three strikes. But getting back to the earlier point about what we can do and what isn't within the power of the Attorney General. So the question was about recidivism as an example, and then we discussed many other issues. You know, I would suggest that we should not judge the capacity of the office based on how the work has traditionally been done. For example, in San Francisco, I did an analysis of who our homicide victims were, who were under the age of 25 when they were killed. And I learned that 94% of them were high school dropouts. Perhaps untraditional for me to ask the question, but I did. I got the answer. And so I went over to the school district and learned that we have a very serious problem of elementary school truancy. Elementary school students missing 60, 70, 80 days of 180-day school year. So it wasn't the traditional role of the DA, but I partnered with our school district. And we created a truancy court and a truancy initiative that over the course of the last 4 years has improved attendance rates by 30% for these children. Why did I do that work? Perhaps it's not the traditional work, but it's directly connected with public safety and being smart around what we can do to actually achieve the outcome by projecting ahead and being creative and being innovative.
Jack Leonard has the next question. This is for Mr. Cooley.
Mr. Cooley, the Attorney General makes about $150,000 a year, which is less than half what you made last year as District Attorney of L.A. County. If you win November's election, do you plan to double dip by taking both a pension and your salary as Attorney General?
Yes, I do. I earned it. 38 years of public service. I definitely earned whatever pension rights I have, and I will certainly rely upon that. To supplement the very low, incredibly low salary that's paid to the state attorney general.
Anything you'd like to add to that?
Go for it, Steve.
When you get there, you'll want yours too.
You've earned it. There's no question.
The answer was pretty definitive.
There's no question.
All right, Marisa.
All right, Ms. Harris, in San Francisco, some critics have accused you of accepting plea deals or not pursuing cases in an attempt to boost your conviction rate. Are you playing politics with criminal cases? What's your response to those charges?
I think any prosecutor would tell you that we have to make a decision about how we charge a case based on whether there is evidence there that can prove it beyond reasonable doubt. And I think every elected DA knows, we certainly talk about it at our meetings, that there will be cases that we want to charge, but we just can't because the evidence does not exist. I am proud, that being said, of the fact that we have the highest conviction rates that we have had in San Francisco in over 15 years. I'm proud of the fact that we have sent twice as many serious and violent felons to state prison. Proud of the fact that we created a gun policy and have increased the conviction rate from 43% to over 90%. Do we win every case? No, we do not.
Mr. Cooley, do you want to address the issue of plea deals?
Well, case settlement, which is the term we use in Los Angeles County, is a vital part of the exercise of discretion by a public prosecutor, and you cannot try all the cases you charge. So what you try and do is have well-intentioned, well-thought-out, law-based case settlement policies that do achieve appropriate goal of public safety, and it's just, you've got to do that. And not be driven by the workload necessarily or the potential trial work. Each case should be filed based upon one fundamental principle. is the admissible evidence such that you can prove the charges charged beyond a reasonable doubt to a reasonable fact finder after consideration of all plausible defenses. And that's what you do in a celebrity case or a standard misdemeanor or a major crime. You always employ the same standard, and that will see you through.
Dan Moran has the next question for Mr. Cooley.
Attorney General Brown has pursued lawsuits against local governments over alleging violations of Assembly Bill 32. This is the bill to reduce greenhouse gas in California. Would you continue that policy, or would you drop these lawsuits?
I would review every single threatening letter that he sent to different parts of the state of California. It may very well be that his analysis of his role, the Attorney General's role under AB 32, is overreaching and beyond his jurisdiction. That's going to take some review of the each individual case. I noticed in his ads he has urged that power be returned to local control and local authorities. That's very inconsistent with the way he's performed his duties as Attorney General. That area has to be reviewed. It may very well be that Attorney General Brown has exceeded his authority and created a very, very bad jobs environment for legitimate businesses and development here in California.
Ms. Harris, would you continue those lawsuits?
I would have to take a look at them. I'm not privy to what they contain at this moment, so it would absolutely require a review and a briefing and an analysis of what the issues are in those cases. But again, I think that what we do know is that the Attorney General has a very, very big impact on how AB 32 will be implemented or not, how it will be interpreted or not. And with on November's ballot, Proposition 23 seeking to basically roll back the progress that was part of a bipartisan effort by Governor Schwarzenegger and Democrats, I think is a big issue in this race and something that my opponent must address and address beyond some broad, vague, sideline approach to the matter, but instead deal with it head on and let us know where he stands.
We're going to change the order here, go to Jack Leonard. He has a question for Ms. Harris, and this may have to be the last question because we're getting short in the hour. Jack?
Sure. If the next governor were to ask you to cut the Department of Justice expenses by, say, 10%, what would you cut?
Well, I would never do that without doing a full analysis of where the resources currently are and how they're being used and do some type of audit to understand what is the current distribution of resources. I could not tell you at this point that I would lob off anything without understanding the impact that would have on the ultimate point that should be the point of issue, which is that we cannot in any way compromise public safety in these difficult budget times. But in order to maximize public safety with limited and reduced resources, we should engage in innovation. Again, I think part of the problem that we're facing right now, and we need some leadership around it, is that everybody knows it, we are on the verge of bankruptcy. I think it is not productive to approach the matter then and blindly say, okay, we're going to just cut 20% off the top. Instead, let's critically examine the systems that have been in place for a long time and agree that some of them are just simply broken. They're not working. Let's infuse metrics into our measurement of effectiveness instead of measuring effectiveness based on a blind adherence to tradition. We can't afford to go on that way in California. And frankly, I think California deserves better and can do better.
Mr. Cooley.
Well, I would not cut the crime labs. Based upon my experience as the district attorney in Los Angeles County, this is something I've emphasized, stressed, encouraged, and supported throughout my 10 years. That's the reason in Los Angeles County we've solved so many previously unsolved old and cold cases, particularly involving sexually motivated serial rapists, like the Grim Sleeper, and like many others we have in Los Angeles County. This is the future. DNA, optimizing that. Crime labs. That is the future. That should not be cut. The Bureau of Narcotic Enforcement is not servicing the local and smaller counties like it used to because Attorney General Lockyer and Brown have allowed it to be cut to by 50% of its former size, from nearly 400 down to 200. They're no longer a player against in a time where we have cartel threats and other major narcotic problems out there throughout the state of California. So those would not be cut. Where if you had to cut, you'd have to look at the overall operation, see which are your priorities, and by my priorities, that would mean the priorities of the public at large out there, the client, the people of the state of California, what are their priorities? And those that are lesser in priority, they may have to be cut, eliminated, streamlined, made smaller, made more efficient. There's all sorts of opportunities. And I've done this because in Los Angeles County, I did have to go through this process back in 2000 through 2004.
We're going to stop there. It has been a fast hour, at least may have seemed so to the audience. I'm not sure how it felt for the candidates. Time now for the closing statements from the two candidates. These are 90 seconds in length, and by a flip of the coin, we start with Kamala Harris.
Thank you, and thank you all for paying such close attention to these issues in this election cycle where the importance of the Office of Attorney General may be lost. I said it in my opening, and I'll repeat it, but we have broken systems in California. And we are a wonderful state as a native Californian. I think we all know and we pride ourselves on being the home of innovation, the place where we create a standard that then becomes replicated throughout the country, the place where change happens in a way that actually improves our efficiency and our effectiveness. And we have that opportunity right now in the midst of crisis to take advantage of the opportunity to actually fix broken systems, to reconfigure, and to accept without any problem that we have failed systems that can be redesigned. I am proud of the work that we have done in that regard in my office. I wrote a book. I've put my ideas out there a while back about what I think we need to do to fix broken systems. And I would suggest that we want an attorney general who has a plan. And unfortunately, I'd say that my opponent does not have a plan for dealing with a lot of the issues that are challenges for our state. This campaign and this race presents two clear choices, and it is the choice between the defensive status quo and innovation, and I believe that California right now wants a leader in the Attorney General and the next Attorney General who is prepared to take on the challenges of the 21st century, and I'm prepared to do that work.
Mr. Cooley, your closing statement.
Yes, thank you very much, and thank you to the Sacramento Bee for sponsoring this debate, and UC Davis for hosting in this great facility. Ms. Harris is correct. We do have important differences between us on the important question of who's going to be the next Attorney General. I would suggest that part of the people out there answering that question are the 47 law enforcement organizations that have endorsed in this race. 47 have endorsed Steve Cooley to be their leader. They're the followers. And quite frankly, a lot of the good innovation, the good ideas, and the good work come from the followers. The police officers on the streets, in the patrol cars, in leadership positions within law enforcement organizations. And I've gotten all of their support. Why? Because they recognize me as a law enforcement professional, a good leader of a public law office, someone who's accomplished something during his 38-year career. 10 years as the elected district attorney in the largest and most diverse county in the United States of America. They know my record, and that's the reason they're supporting me. I think what the public at large needs, finally, in this office, finally, is someone who's got a prosecutorial background and is a professional and is a nonpartisan. Nonpartisan. If you visit your political ideology into that office where you're the people's lawyer, you're going to fail. You have to represent a client. Figure out what your client wants. What's in their best interest? How can you service them? What are their needs? And you'll do fine. But if you impose your ideology, like, I don't like the death penalty, I'm not going to follow it, I'm not going to implement it, then you're not going to be serving your client. You're not going to be serving the law.
Okay.
Remember who your client is. Do your job for them.
All right. Thanks to both of you. This concludes this debate between Steve Cooley and Kamala Harris, who are candidates for California Attorney General. We want to thank our panelists this afternoon, Dan Moraine, Marisa Lagos, and Jack Leonard. And again, thanks to the UC Davis School of Law and the Sacramento Bee for helping to organize this event. I'm Kevin Riggs of KCRA3. Be sure to vote on November 2nd.
You've been listening to the first debate between Attorney General candidates Steve Cooley and Kamala Harris, a special broadcast of the California Report and KQED Public Radio.